Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
April 16th, 2019. Thank you for joining me today. I only have four real big topics that I want to cover today. And before I get into the topics, I want to make sure and put another notification out there for all those. Tomorrow, I believe I'm going to be trying to do the DLive show, but I feel like some people got confused. I'm not going to be doing this show on DLive. This show will be on YouTube as well as everywhere else. It's also on DTube and Steemit and BitChute and everywhere else. But I'm going to be doing the TLive research and review starting maybe once a week or more on DLive coming very soon, possibly tomorrow. And if you'd like to be notified about this, because it won't go out on YouTube, make sure you sign up for our Discord chat, which is in the links, as well as Wire, which if one of my mods will put the link in the show notes or in the chat there for you, you'll get a ping from me before every live show, including those I do on DLive. So if you'd like to be included for the TLive research and reviews that will be coming on DLive, make sure you sign up for one of those. Otherwise, tune in every day for the Daily Wrap-Up and all the information you will get here on either YouTube, BitChute, any of the other groups that we put them on. But the research and review will be coming soon, so make sure you tune in for that. But for the four stories from today, very important stuff. More evidence that the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia are deeply involved, if not entirely behind, the coup in Sudan. And evidence that shows just how far the U.S. will go to ensure Israeli dominance in the Middle East, even overthrowing the governments that refuse to put Israel and the U.S. interests before their own. Venezuela releases more information showing how Guaido and his regime change extremists were plotting violent acts and theft of state assets and anything that will hurt Venezuela so they can then turn and blame it on Maduro. The Pentagon is developing new military options for Venezuela, both for regime change and specifically to, as they say, deter Russia and China from doing anything to help President Maduro. But to begin today, just how far the U.S. government is reaching, playing it fast and loose with the law, or really ignoring it altogether, as with so many other topics we recently discussed, in order to prosecute Julian Assange. For the first story, coming from Zero Hedge, a very, very big story, and not surprising for those that have been paying attention, for them to use their same tired ploys that they use all over the place. Yet again here with Julian Assange. Unsealed affidavit tries to put WikiLeaks in cahoots with the Taliban. Bin Laden. Then they can just sweep it up with all of their broad, obtuse foreign policy and saying, oh, well, he's a terrorist, so is Iran, and so is anybody we point at, so we'll just continue to attack them. Nobody pay attention. Nobody dig deeper. He's connected with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and Bin Laden. This is what they're saying. And this is the 2007. This is the affidavit that is now unsealed. This dates back. This is from the Trump administration. So this has been ongoing for a very long time, trying to mix all of this. Basically, they're trying to combine all of their classic propaganda efforts to take down Julian Assange, or rather, more appropriately, to take down the ability to leak information about the crimes committed by powerful governments. In particular, we're talking about the U.S. government in this regard. Now, on Monday, a federal judge in Virginia unsealed the original 2017 affidavit and criminal complaint on which Assange's extradition, the request, to the U.S. is based. Now, offering new details, including chat logs between Assange and former Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning, at the time it was Bradley, which attempted to support a single count of conspiracy to commit computer intrusion, which may or may not have exceeded. As many of you know that have been following this story, the U.S. alleges Assange actively sought and encouraged Manning to crack a password to access classified information on a Defense Department network. The affidavit claims details related to this charge, for instance, chat logs, discussions between the pair over how to crack the password, which I've pointed out, as well as many others, that we're taking it at their word that this is Assange. It seems like it is. I'd actually probably say it's more than most unlikely, based even on the fact that Manning also thought it was Assange, but still, it's not. I don't think it's proven that it is, in fact, Assange, as he was using a different handle. It just doesn't seem like they can prove that. I do think it was, but it just shows you how shoddy their case is overall. Now, it says, quote, investigators have not recovered a response by Manning to Assange's question. Again, assuming that it was Assange. And there is no other evidence as to what Assange did, if anything, with respect to the password. This according to the document. To their own information, mind you. Now, we need to take note of just how much This all leans on hypotheticals and speculation. In the entire case, as one person on Twitter pointed out, would remains unknown. No other evidence, all through the actual affidavit. Cracking the password would have allowed Manning to log into the computers under username that did not belong to her. Such as deceptive measures would have made it more difficult. While it remains unknown whether Manning, on and on and on. The entire thing is based on the hypothetical, which this would not apply if this wasn't the U.S. government behind this. This is entirely flimsy. The entire thing is like this. Investigations have not recovered a response, and there's no other evidence, on and on and on. This is the point the person's making with this tweet. Thank you for the super chat, Sammy. Very, very obvious. Now, the document, the affidavit, the document uses maximal and hyped language, as the article puts it, to describe, quote, one of the largest compromises of classified information in the history of the United States, which may in fact be true, but that compromised classified information revealed that they were committing massive war crimes. They just like to leave that part out. Yet, of course, struggles to ascertain the document really does struggle to ascertain whether the illegal agreement that Assange and Manning reached specifically led to the release of the document trove, obviously very important for the charges against Assange to hold up at all, which I argue that in a real court that wasn't completely bastardized and manipulated by people in power would not hold up at all. Now, concerning a potential extradition to the United States, the probable cause is cited to be the hundreds of messages sent between Manning and Assange on the Jabber platform. So literally because a journalist is discussing things with a source and asking them for information, which is what journalists do, this is their probable cause. I mean, really wrap your mind around that. It's all based on the fact that they just label him something other than a journalist, even though it's exactly what he is. Now, the argument is that Assange and Manning understood that it, quote, would cause injury to the United States. Not sure how you can prove that somebody understood something after the fact, but clearly they're saying that they, because they knew that this would possibly, again, adding the hypothetical, cause possible injury to the United States, that this is why they're guilty, especially with U.S. forces active on the ground in Afghanistan. Except that this is not the case. It's been roundly shown that this, in fact, did not harm anybody. And more to the point, that Assange is incredibly careful when he releases information, as he's shown in the past, to make sure to go through and actually not release anything that could potentially endanger somebody. You know, actually caring about human life, including the people committing the war crimes. But see, this is not what they want you to recognize. They're trying to throw out this wild hypothetical that maybe somebody could have been hurt, so they're breaking crimes. Don't look deeper. Again, just listen to what we're telling you and just know that they're bad people. This is what they're telling you. But on this point of whether the leaks did actually harm somebody and do damage to U.S. efforts, even the document itself is left-reaching, trying to spin and insinuate a narrative that puts WikiLeaks and terrorist groups like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in cahoots. They're literally trying to reach with this narrative to insinuate because it could have put people in danger and because people could have used this information, that it means that they were somehow, this jump to being that they were working with terrorist groups. I mean, this is tired people, and they are reaching. Now, it starts by claiming that, quote, after the release of the Afghanistan war reports, a member of the Taliban contacted the New York Times, which I find incredibly interesting in and of itself. It says the supposed Taliban member said, quote, we are studying the report. If they are U.S. spies, then we will know how to punish them. This is just fun. It's just this strange and somewhat comical example is meant to support the notion that Assange ultimately aided America's enemies with these leaks, which is ridiculous. On its face, it is ridiculous. Now, according to the Washington Examiner, quote, the affidavit alleged that the Taliban exploited the WikiLeaks disclosures to put U.S. allies in danger. And again, just because somebody took something that was put out to the world and used it for their benefit, this now makes it Assange's fault, or more so that he worked knowingly with terrorists. This is just pitiful reaching. But that he exploited the WikiLeaks disclosures, or rather the Taliban exploited the WikiLeaks disclosures to put U.S. allies in danger, citing a New York Times article headline. Because we know how much that means today. Because the New York headline says this, and we're talking about the affidavit from the U.S. government citing a headline from a source, the New York Times, that has been found to be lying routinely throughout the past just so many years, but way before that. As if their headline means that it's real. I mean, this is a self-confirming circle of information. These people are fraudulent. And the headline, guess what? Taliban study WikiLeaks to hunt informants. Ooh, how damaging. It also said the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound showed that he was actively seeking information contained in the WikiLeaks disclosures, and that Al-Qaeda was providing him with information from the leaked Afghanistan war reports, which is probably even true. But the reality is we're talking about releasing information that they then use. How is that? First of all, how can you show that he knowingly worked with them other than having some kind of proof, which they don't have? It's just, I mean, think about this. So the U.S. government, this is what really gets me here. The U.S. government, thank you for the super chat, Anna, by the way. So the U.S. government commits serious war crimes. And remember, this is undisputed. Commits massive war crimes, kills people, kills journalists. Manning leaks the info on these crimes to WikiLeaks. Then releases proof. WikiLeaks then releases proof of U.S. war crimes. Simple. Something news outlets have done countless times, such as the Pentagon Papers about Vietnam or any other, or even today with New York Times, Washington Post leaking the most innocuous, ridiculous things about something Trump said or something he did secretly. And that's ridiculous. As well as the fact that divulging crimes of the government is supposed to be protected under the Whistleblowers Act. But, you know, they just don't care about that. And again, the Pentagon Papers is an important aspect of this because this all stems back to the reality that they're simply saying Assange is not a journalist, even though he is. No evidence behind it. Just that's their claim, and that's they're asserting that as fact and moving forward because they want to make sure that they can't overlap this with what journalists do on a regular basis. Now, and because this exposed the information that Manning leaked to WikiLeaks that they then put out, because this exposed the fact that many in the U.S. government were guilty of war crimes, making them criminals, and because an ostensible enemy of the U.S. sought to then use this against the U.S., as any enemy likely would, information that's roundly available to the world, they want you to believe this means Assange worked with the Taliban and bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Clearly, I actually do think this did hurt U.S. efforts on the ground. But we need to wrap our minds around the fact that their efforts on the ground included killing innocent civilians and journalists and covering it up, as we now know, thanks to Manning and Assange. But what they want you to think is this messed up some freedom operation where we were rescuing people around the world and saving lives and liberating oppressed peoples. And oh my God, Assange's information stopped that on the ground. And of course, put people's lives in danger, which it did none of, actually. What it actually did is save people's lives, possibly showing them that you should not be working with this government because they'll put your lives at risk. Now, this is an embarrassingly flimsy claim from the U.S. government, trying to link Assange to the Taliban and bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. But even if it were true, which it's clearly not, I guess we're just supposed to forget that bin Laden was a CIA asset and that the U.S. is right this moment working on making a deal with the Taliban and is currently working with Al-Qaeda in Yemen and in Syria. I mean, this is just, it's just ridiculous. You really have to put aside your logic entirely to really believe what they're telling you on a regular basis. It's that ridiculous. Now, somehow this is meant to imply that WikiLeaks is in a roundabout way assisting Al-Qaeda's mission on the ground. This is the real takeaway they want you to think. The FBI is clearly grasping with its bin Laden benefited theory due to the flimsiness of evidence to support the original conspiracy to commit computer intrusion aspect. They are reaching because they have nothing. Doesn't mean they won't charge him. Doesn't mean they won't put him in prison. Doesn't mean they won't succeed. But we all have to recognize how absolutely lacking they are in every possible way. They are in the wrong, just like they were in the wrong when they murdered people in Afghanistan and many other places around the world that these people revealed. And now we have the guilty people charging and arresting the innocent people that revealed the crimes of the guilty people. This is the reality of our world today. And as the author notes to end the article, the document's author, FBI Special Agent Megan Brown, confesses that her understanding of the 7-year-old criminal conspiracy, remember that the Obama administration deemed too dangerous to press freedom, so they didn't pursue it, is based on testimony of a forensic examiner in Manning's court-martial. She says, my conversations with FBI forensic examiners and research on the internet, she says. Which, again, the author writes, research on the internet? Perhaps the FBI found itself over-reliant on Wikipedia for those times it couldn't concoct WikiLeaks Taliban connections out of the New York Times headlines. It's just very funny to think about this dependence on Wikipedia. As we know, this is one of the least reputable sources you can go to, as people can edit things online and certain people control far too much information on there. They end the article by saying this is about maintaining the illusion. And that's the truth. It's about maintaining this illusion right in front of us. Truly, they could just lock up Assange right now and throw away the key, as they've done to others in the past. But it's a very important right now for them, for the United States. It's very important to the U.S. oligarchy to resell Americans, especially with 2020 coming up, on the lie that we live in a democracy and that the rule of law is paramount. But the mask has slipped. And it's important that you point that out to everybody around you. Now, I reported yesterday on this is an important story in regard to military invasion in Venezuela and the discussion at the CSIS meeting, the secret meeting, about doing so. I just discussed this yesterday. But now we have this developing, and it seems, I feel like this story is kind of a counter to the fact that that other story got revealed. But it seems like military options more so than just on the ground are being developed, but at the same time, the Pentagon officials are claiming that they don't want that. So there's a little bit of a rift between the United States government and people they're working with. This coming from Antimedia, Pentagon developing military options to deter Russia and China in Venezuela. Interesting. So more military options are coming out of the woodwork now to stop other countries who are seeking to help people that are suffering due to U.S. actions. And of course, profiting and doing things that are going to benefit them as well while they're helping people, something the U.S. cannot claim as much as they try to about what's happening in Venezuela. Now, under the orders of John Bolton, the Pentagon is developing new military options for Venezuela, both for regime change and, funny, something that, remember, they used to pretend is never, we don't want regime change, we don't want regime change anywhere, the Nikki Haley said. Well, clearly now they're even discussing plans specifically for regime change, which those that are paying attention know this. I mean, it's a ridiculous, I can't believe they ever even tried to pretend that they weren't seeking regime change. But now it's right out in the open. And of course, they claim it specifically to deter Russia and China from apparently doing anything to help President Maduro, which, understand, also translates into stopping them from doing anything to help the Venezuelan people. Now, while officials continue to insist, quote, all options are on the table to anyone with a microphone or a pen or just happens to be walking by, Pentagon officials claim they are trying to come up with plans that stop short of direct military invasion or any combat operations. Now, the author makes the point, the great point, however, that the administration's appetite for aggressive military intervention doesn't necessarily extend to the Pentagon leadership. And they are more inclined to try to focus on increasing their regional presence instead of outright trying to conquer Venezuela. Now, I'm not sure I agree with that. But it's important to make clear that even within the U.S. government, there's a wide variety of varying opinions and agendas. Yes, most of them are controlled and greatly influenced by the ruling class and their lobbyists. But even within this fraudulent system, there are those who fight back against this power to one degree or another. It's important to see that. But I'm not sure I necessarily agree with this. I think this is more of a cover personally. Now, while Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and his warmongering sycophants concoct new deceptions and manipulations and plan potential military actions, he also accused China of bankrolling Maduro to prolong the crisis that they created and are in fact prolonging. It's ridiculous. The Chinese officials fired right back that Pompeo's comments were, quote, irresponsible and utterly unjustifiable, adding that, quote, and this is the best part, lies are lies. Even if you say it 1,000 times, they're still lies, Mr. Pompeo. You can stop. Which it's pretty funny. I mean, it's exactly what we're watching happen. Doesn't mean China doesn't do the exact same thing and are just as corrupt, but it's just funny to see them call it what it is. And of course, China's ambassador told a Chilean newspaper, quote, Mr. Pompeo has lost his mind. Which is just funny. But the point is that I think that everybody can see how flimsy this is, which is why they haven't succeeded. They're working overtime in hopes to turn the tide in on the side of U.S. intervention of a foreign country, which is just ridiculous. Nobody supports that anymore. I mean, I shouldn't say nobody. People do. But the majority does not support that anymore, and that's abundantly clear. Now, for the next story in regard to Venezuela, directly relates to the U.S. puppet therein, coming from South Front, Venezuela reveals right-wing terrorist cell with Juan Guaido as one of its members. As you can see the image right there, Not that image proves anything, but this is something we've seen developing. We know based on the research of the gray zone that Juan Guaido is directly connected to some of the most extremist elements in Venezuela, as well as U.S. regime change cultivation happening in the United States. These people are part of these groups that have been part of the violent efforts in the past. And now the point is that Venezuela, the government, the real government, is releasing more evidence showing how deeply connected these people are to the most violent actions happening in Venezuela. And by the way, they've already released, I've covered this before, they've released text message, phone information, stuff that that applies to actual court of law, which is what they're talking about. They're actually seeking to charge Guaido. You know, something clearly dictators do, put them through the legal process, which is just funny, which, you know, that shows you all the contradictions in their logic, that they allow newspapers to put out stories that are basically regurgitating U.S. talking points, because that's what dictators do, allow their media to talk negatively about them, or allow Guaido to run freely through the streets and create violent revolution. Yeah, that's what dictators do. I mean, it's just absurd on its face. Now, on April 14th, Venezuelan Information Minister Jorge Rodriguez revealed information on the alleged right-wing terror cell, as they're calling it, that I covered in recent shows. Now, U.S. proclaimed President Juan Guaido, his advisor Roberto Marrero, who we also covered recently, is, of course, accused being a part of the whole thing, as well as Guaido. Ricardo Hosman, as well as Leopoldo Lopez, who we've also talked about in the past, who was deeply involved in previous efforts to overthrow the government. Now, Roberto Marrero was arrested on March 21st, after the Venezuelan intelligence services and the prosecution allegedly discovered a link between him and the violent right-wing organizations. Now, the same violent organizations, again, that Guaido verifiably came up in and cut his teeth under the most violent people working to overthrow governments in Venezuela backed by Western powers. Now, according to Rodriguez, the information Marrero provided voluntarily to the prosecutor's office, in addition to information discovered on Marrero's cell phone, presented a large operation of political, military, and financial aggression, hurting the Venezuelan people. It says, quote, in Mr. Marrero's phone, there are groups of fascist terrorist factors and the Venezuelan right planning violent actions and to steal state assets. This is according to the information minister and the evidence he's presented that has been acknowledged. Now, in the discovered chats from this group, there are three forms of aggression that were planned. One, it says, quote, the first is to threat to obstruct transactions with debit and credit cards, causing the payment system to collapse. So more attacks on the economy, and not just the economy as it relates to the government, but specifically the use of it. Like for the average individuals on the ground, that is exactly what we're talking about. They claim, oh, we're only attacking the government when this exact effort is designed to upset and destabilize the people on the ground. The payment system. We're not talking about Maduro using the payment system. We're talking about the civilians not being able to access their funds and use the payment system. So they get unhappy and they revolt. This is what they do. And it says the second is to appropriate and distribute a right-wing corruption network more than $400 million of U.S. state assets from Citgo. So more than the U.S., the money that they've already stolen, billions and billions of dollars from Venezuela. But they're talking about appropriate and distribute Venezuela's money for their corrupt, basically to continue to try to overthrow Maduro's government. As always, stealing their assets from the Venezuelan people to carry out their agenda. Something Trump has said is what we should be doing. You go in, you take their assets, you give part of it to the rebels, and you let them overthrow the country. Everybody wins. To the victor go the spoils. He said this numerous times. Now, third is to grab army deserters, put them in other uniforms, take a photo, and issue fake statements. So, false flags, psychological operations, manipulations. We've already seen this happen numerous times with the involvement of the mainstream media. It's apparent. Now, Russia will also assist in the investigation into the alleged cyber attacks on Venezuelan state power grid, the Guri hydroelectric dam. Now, remember here, I find this to be incredibly relevant right now. We just discussed the Vault 7 WikiLeaks release and why Moon of Alabama believes this is actually the primary reason why he was arrested, which proved that U.S. governments, or the U.S. government, excuse me, has hacking tools that were revealed that were designed to carry out exactly this type of attack on a foreign country and then make it look like another government was committed the act, right down to the source code. At the time, it was specifically Russian and Iranian, but consider this under a Venezuelan attack, as if they were the ones that attacked something. I mean, it's very clear what we're seeing here. This is called a false flag. Of course, something that YouTube will delist you for discussing because conspiracy does not exist, according to YouTube. Again, while Assange is literally being charged with conspiracy, but I digress. Now, also, on April 14th, the International Monetary Fund's director, Christine Lagarde, said that the World Bank and the IMF decided not to recognize Juan Guaido as Venezuela's legitimate leader, but they will support whoever the Venezuelans choose to choose internally. Now, this is a very big deal. This is a huge knock to the U.S. efforts, as they're trying to pretend like they have momentum and they're winning. They're clearly not. And now even some very big organizations here, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, are not going along with the U.S. plan, which I find very interesting. We just talked about this, how despite the fact that they already said they are, and now have overtly said they're not going to recognize Guaido, the U.S. already had the ability to freeze IMF funds that Venezuela has access to. How is that even possible? It's possible because it shows you the U.S. has that much influence over the IMF. Even though they're now saying they won't recognize Juan Guaido, the U.S. was still able to freeze funds in Venezuela. Think about that. Now, meanwhile, of course, Juan Guaido himself wrote a piece that was dutifully published by Bloomberg, of course. I wonder if they would publish something from Maduro, probably not, appealing to China, interestingly enough, to, quote, switch sides in Venezuela, claiming that Maduro has lost popular support. This after, again, the IMF just made their statement. Yet, of course, again, if it were true that he lost popular support, this would already be over. It would be done. They're just trying to lie in hopes that that could manipulate. It's just, a very on its face obvious attempt to try to manipulate people into switching sides. It's kind of pitiful that they keep trying to do it over and over. But the interesting part is that Pompeo and everyone was just attacking China for their efforts in Venezuela, as Guaido now reaches out to them and tries to tell them that we know you're on the right side and you want to fight for freedom. The whole letter is in the link. You can read for yourself. It's pretty ridiculous. And as always, wildly disconnected from what's really happening. But of course, while they feverishly tried to convince you how bad Maduro is, you know, without actually showing you anything, just battering you with repeated lies, more evidence continues to come out showing that these same people are behind regime change efforts being carried out in Libya and Sudan specifically, as well as many other locations we've talked about routinely on this show. But the hypocrisy in all of this is astounding, as half of the fake two-party system is still yelling about Russian meddling, while your very own government people are meddling everywhere. It's the definition of hypocrisy. For the next article coming from Mint Press News, Saudi Arabia, Israel, U.S. all sought Bashir's ouster. So how real was the Sudan revolution? It's a good question we should be asking ourselves. Now, last Thursday, the decades-long rule of Sudan's president Omar al-Bashir came to an end as the country's longtime leader was ousted in a military coup that followed months of protests against his rule. Now, Bashir's overthrow was widely hailed in the United States as a revolution brought on by a people-powered movement, which is their same old tired routine they've done everywhere else. Of course, in this case, women played a prominent role because we know how much that has been added to the agenda. They tried the same thing in Saudi Arabia, but then, of course, the Saudis arrested the people that were protesting for what they were trying to pretend was happening. So it didn't work out because the Saudis are bad. The monarchy, I should say, the Saudi monarchy are bad, bad people, to take Trump's term. But of course, this time, women played a prominent role in this people-powered movement. Indeed, the symbol of this recent revolution has apparently become a 22-year-old student, Alaa Salah, after a picture of her speaking to a crowd went viral on Tuesday, which is interesting, with some in international media dubbing her Sudan's Statue of Liberty. I mean, do you see where this is going? The Bana Alba, or the same things they've done. The Omans, the Banas, the children used in these movements. Same with the school shootings where they rise up some child to be some spokesman for the... It's emotional manipulation. That's what it's all about. Now, while Bashir's lengthy rule over the Sudan has been filled with countless authoritarian actions and state-sponsored violence over the years, same things they ignore there while focusing and pretending they're happening in their adversary states, and while many Sudanese citizens were likely all too eager for a change in government, which does seem to be the case, powerful forces, the United States chief among them, had sought Bashir's ouster for other reasons, much of their motive linked to the country's oil reserves. Again, is this sounding familiar? Now, while the deterioration of Saudi-Sudanese relations, while their relations with the Saudi Arabian government was deteriorating due to their disagreement on the Yemen war specifically, because the government was involved in the Yemen war in the beginning, and it seemed like they were being used as the cannon fodder, and as well, the Yemen war was just getting a lot of negative attention, that kind of caused a rift, and they began to separate. Now, while this deterioration of these relations seemed to have played a role in Bashir's ouster, recent events have suggested that another key player, of course, in last week's coup was the state of Israel, particularly Israel's intelligence agency, Mossad, as we've touched a little bit on in recent shows. Now, despite having ruled out any possibility of normalizing relations with the Zionist enemy, as Bashir had called it in 2013 in regard to Israel, his government began to openly signal its willingness to reconsider forging ties with Tel Aviv in 2016. Soon after Bashir had cut ties with Iran and sought the Saudis' good graces, trying to find his way into the power structure. Now, at the time, Israeli media reported that the Israeli government was lobbying the United States to improve its relationship with the Sudan specifically. You see, again, this is what we're talking about. This is the obvious stuff. But this is funny how this is exactly what people like Ilhan Omar was referring to. And she was called anti-Semitic for pointing out, and it's literally, we can see the Israeli government lobbied the United States in order to manipulate what was happening with the Sudan. Very clear. Now, some in Sudan's government said that they would consider normalizing ties with Israel in exchange for lifting U.S. sanctions. So you see how these punitive actions work. The U.S. is putting sanctions on the Sudan, so they then bend to the will of what they want, which is normalizing ties with Israel, because we know how important that is to Americans. Clearly. Now, however, there was resistance from within Sudan's political establishment, given that many still apparently remembered the Israeli bombings that took place in Sudan, such as the bombing Sudanese military targets in 2009, 2012, 2014, as well as Israelis' decades-long arming of anti-government rebels, also sounding very familiar, that manipulated stuff that was happening in Sudan. Funny how these things are happening all over the world, and they deny they're happening in Syria and other places, and we just pretend that it's not the case because we don't hear about the Sudan. This is taking a backseat to so many other big stories. But the same tired ploys are happening all over the world. Same thing's happening in Libya right now. The same thing is happening in countless locations, and it's a big effort that we're seeing play out right now involving Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the United States. It should be alarming to us. I just talked about this. Now, since 1967, Israel has armed and trained anti-government fighters in Sudan. That's a fact. These are terrorists, what we're talking about here, with that support intensifying in 1989 after Bashir took power in a coup that year. Now, Israel's clandestine involvement in Sudan had long been called a proxy war against Iran, as we've been seeing everywhere else, right? The same thing they're doing in Syria and everywhere, for that matter, up until Bashir's 2016 decision to cut ties with the Islamic Republic. Now, notably, and again, you have to understand how this is all basically the U.S. pressuring Sudan to comply with what the U.S. foreign policy entails for them in this area. Now, notably, Bashir's openly stated in January, several weeks after the protests had begun, these recent protests, that he had been advised that he could ensure the stability of his rule were he to agree to normalize relations with Israel, suggesting that foreign interests eager to see those ties materialize were involved in Sudan's protests and later rejecting any possibility of ties with Israel. I mean, really think about what he's saying there. In an open statement, he said that they reached out to him. People in the world claiming this is a, you know, organic protest in the Sudan, even though they claim that about every protest that they've been involved in everywhere. And he was advised, if you normalize relations with Israel, I'm sure that this protest will magically just dissipate. They were threatened. They were extorting them. We're destabilizing your country. And unless you're willing to work with Israel, we're going to continue to destabilize you and possibly overthrow you. I mean, this is powerful stuff. And as I recently reported, Sudan's intelligence chief, CIA-connected Salah Ghosh, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, who was intricately involved in Bashir's recent ouster. He was involved with the overthrowing of this government, had met with the chief of Israel's Mossad in February. And they wanted this person to be in charge. This was very, just like in Venezuela, we see the U.S. and Israel involved with setting it up, executing it, and then pretending not to be involved. Now, notably, as I recently pointed out, Ghosh was one of the interim leaders of the military council that ousted Bashir last week. Though he apparently quit his leadership role in the council on Saturday, as protesters had demanded that the military council be replaced with a civilian-led government. There was a great article by Geopolitics Alert as well that outlines the reality that the people were in fact revolting against Bashir. But the U.S. also wanted him out for very different reasons, as this article points out. But then what they did was they pretended this was what the people got, or that they won. Sure, hooray, the people got what they wanted. But they snuck in a military, basically under martial law. And the people said, no, this is not what we're talking about. We don't want Bashir, and we also don't want your U.S.-Israeli-backed government. They're not taking it. So it's interesting how this is developing. So why he may have quit, that may have been a part of it. Now, Israel's apparent role in this military coup that ousted Bashir last week comes just days after a general in the Israeli Defense Force, IDF, revealed that Israel had been behind the 2013 military coup that ousted Mohamed Morsi and installed al-Sisi, who has closely aligned Egypt and with Israeli interests since taking power. So now, I mean, we have Israel admitting that they were the ones that overthrew a government and put Sisi in place, who is no angel, clearly, as well as now we're seeing it happen in Libya, in the Sudan, not to mention that it's already happened in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria. They're trying to do it in Iran. It's happening in Yemen. It happened in the Ukraine. I mean, it's unbelievable, not to mention every Latin American country. It is unbelievable to see how much this is happening. And now they're just openly admitting it, illegally overthrowing countries. And in the moment, like with Venezuela, pretending we're doing it for freedom. And now it's happening in Sudan, or already happened in Sudan right in front of us, and no one's even paying attention. Remember, these people are dictators. These are not the good people. They're putting people in power that are the worst among these people, and then pointing to their adversaries who are doing a fraction of that and claiming they're the evil villains of the world. Now, Israel's apparent role in Sudan's recent coup suggests that the Jewish ethno-state's efforts to force the normalization of relations with Muslim-majority nations that have long supported the Palestinian cause still continue. Now think about that. The point is that they are attacking countries that are on the wrong side, as Israel sees it, of the Palestinian-Israeli issue, and overthrowing their country and manipulating their government to the point to where they're then on Israel's side. I mean, this is powerful stuff, and it should be unnerving to you that, one, that the U.S. government is involved in this, And two, that this is happening right now today while we're apparently not paying attention. Countries are falling all over the place. Now, the U.S. government also, again, appears to have been involved to a serious extent in this effort to end Bashir's 30-year-long rule. Indeed, Bashir has long been targeted by the U.S. government, as government cables published by WikiLeaks have clearly shown. Link to this is in the show notes. Plotting for Bashir exit intensifies. It states, among other things, that efforts were being made within Sudan and even within Bashir's own political party, quote, to broker a quick and graceful removal of President al-Bashir within the next few months, with the president going into exile in Saudi Arabia, though discussions of a transition have stalled. Now, remember that they're claiming still that this was a popular uprising, despite the WikiLeaks evidence that was to the opposite, despite Israel saying stuff to the opposite, despite evidence coming out everywhere, including the Saudis, and they're financing this effort on paper, evidence, we can see it all. And yet they still maintain, oh no, this is just an organic uprising. We don't know what's going on over there. Just like Trump says, oh, I don't know what WikiLeaks is. It's just blatantly lying to your face. It's important that we begin to see these lies for what they truly are. Now, in recent years, the U.S. involvement in efforts targeting Bashir's rule have been mostly covert and achieved through, as they call, soft power organizations aimed at democracy promotion. Like we just saw the agents of democracy in Venezuela, they call them. Like this is their pseudonyms for their regime change machine. Right? These soft power organizations and their democracy promotion, such as U.S. Agency for Internal Development or USAID, And of course, the National Endowment for Democracy, the NED. USAID is a highly politicized organization pretending to be a humanitarian organization that literally has chosen a side in Venezuela. They're working to put in power Guaido. It's in their own documentation. That's why the Red Cross and the United Nations won't work with them, because they're politicized. They're manipulating people. And as I said recently, the National Endowment for Democracy has said in the past on record that they do now today what the CIA used to do in clandestine fashion 50 years ago. They pretend that's going in and, you know, trying to save governments that are collapsing. But what that means is they're going in and overthrowing governments by destabilizing from within, pretending to fight for humanitarian rights. And this is what we're seeing. This is the efforts they've been doing thus far. Now, the correlation of increased funding of USAID's activities in the Sudan and, of course, increased unrest in the country are very telling. Exactly the same. As they increased funding in USAID, oh, of course, the protests went worse. It's funny how they went up at the same time. I'm sure it's all coincidence. It's incredibly telling, given USAID's documented track record in hastening the transition of governments that Washington seeks to destabilize or overthrow. Coincidentally, of course, they just happen to be there. They're only fighting for, you know, humanitarian needs, obviously. Now, as Bashir was not supportive of the Yemen invasion at the end, of course, I feel this was a major factor in this regime change, personally, because as soon as they got their puppet in power, we get this. Sudan all of a sudden pledges to continue supporting Saudi-led coalition in Yemen. I wonder if that played a factor. Clearly, it's just one aspect. There's probably many aspects we can't even fathom of why they wanted to overthrow this government and put in a puppet that would bend the knee to U.S.-Israeli interests. But this is clearly one of them. And the point is that they're willing to kill people, to create violent revolution that takes people's lives, that creates destabilizing efforts for countries, that makes people's lives problematic, causes suffering for people. They're willing to do all of this just to achieve their political goals. By the way, that's called terrorism. That's the actual definition of terrorism. Using violence to achieve political goals. It's terrorism. That's the actual definition. So literally what we're talking about is using violence to overthrow countries, not to save people, not for humanitarian reasons, not to better the world, but, you know, to continue the catastrophic Yemen war, to continue to starve 20 million people to death. That's called terrorism. Just one of the many things we really need to come to terms with from what these governments truly are and what they're actually doing. It's very important today. We really must be able to see how this very, very clearly exposes the U.S. executing Israeli foreign policy all over the world at the expense of, and usually to the detriment of, or to, the American people. Overthrowing countries that support the Palestinians. Overthrowing countries that stand against U.S. interests. And putting a dictator in place that is visibly worse and represents everything they pretend they're fighting. This is what's happening all over the world. And it's never been more important to stand up and say something about it. Thank you so much for being here today. As always, I appreciate you being in the chat, taking part in the discussion, sharing the link, getting the information out there. Truly, it's never been a more important time. Because we are making a difference, and they're aggressively more so every day trying to shut us down because we're making that difference. So it's never been more important to get out there and spread the word. If you'd like to support The Last American Vagabond, you can do so in the show notes with any of the links to PayPal, Bitbacker, Patreon, or just you could buy a Question Everything t-shirt from the link to truthclothing.io. But really, as I continue to say, and I truly mean this, more so than financial support, the most important thing you can do is think. Dive further. Research. Do your due diligence. Ask questions and share this information. And if you disagree with me, join the show and give us your opinion, because that is what this is all about. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.